Devotees of Arthur Conan Doyle know that Sherlock Holmes survived his tumble over the Reichenbach Falls and eventually retired to Surrey to practice beekeeping. And that's where Mitch Cullen finds him to set in motion the action of his sixth book. It's called A Slight Trick of the Mind. That's a long way from Surrey to California's San Gabriel Valley, where Mitch Cullen lives. So what's the connection?
A very well-known Sherlockian scholar, he's no longer living, named William S. Baring Gould, wrote a faux biography of Sherlock Holmes in the 60s.
Right.
His biography was called Sherlock Holmes of Baker Street. Regrettably, I don't think it's in print anymore, but I have an old hardback that I kind of treasure. But it gives you this timeline, and he followed it using the Doyle stories. And then at some point towards the end of the book or the middle part of the book, he deviates into that realm that Doyle didn't write about, which was Holmes's retirement. And he wrote it as if Holmes was a real person. So that became my source material as I was writing this book. So what he let me know is when Holmes was born and when he died, actually. He has an actual date for Sherlock Holmes' death, which is he lived to be 103, according to William S. Baring Gould, and died in the 1950s.
Wow.
So going by that, I was able to say, okay, well, he would have been 93 in 1947.
Yeah. It does raise one of the interesting things about this, which is that the beekeeper Sherlock Holmes you've created lives past the Second World War, which I don't think anybody wants to picture somehow. Mm. Holmes is Victorian, and it creates a world in which Holmes doesn't really seem to fit.
Actually, you know, the seed of that was with my grandmother. Her roommate at this retirement home that she was in was also 103, and actually at the time was older than my grandmother. So my grandmother was in her late 90s, and her roommate was 103. And I realized that this woman had dipped her toes into three centuries, and that fascinated me, you know. And thinking of everything she had seen, I couldn't imagine what that must have been like for her. And I'm not so sure she maybe thought of it that way, you know. What would someone like Sherlock Holmes think of things like the atomic bomb, you know?
Right. Well, that's the fascinating thing, is that when this story begins, you've just brought Holmes home from a trip to Japan, to Hiroshima. And Holmes, now he goes there not to see the atomic bomb, though of course he does see the effects of it, but to discuss bees with a Japanese gentleman, right?
Right, Mr. Yumazaki.
Well, when Holmes gets to Japan, he is brought there under false pretenses.
Right.
Mr. Yumazaki really wants something entirely different from him.
That's right, yeah. He believes that Sherlock Holmes holds the key to a personal mystery, not a grand mystery or a murder mystery, but more of an unresolved personal issue involving his father, Mr. Yumazaki's father.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started thinking about Holmes and how many cases must have been presented to him over the years had he existed, and thinking he probably didn't remember all of them, you know, how could he? And especially at 93, he probably wasn't thinking that much about them. So the idea was that Mr. Yumazaki believed that Holmes had somehow been involved in or had been associated with his father, and Holmes indeed couldn't remember his father at all. And that becomes the kind of situation between those two men in Japan.
Yeah.
Holmes trying to remember the father and Mr. Yumazaki desperately wanting to know more about his father.
Well, it gives you the opportunity to look more deeply into Holmes' character beyond the surface deductive capability,
right,
to how he actually used those deductions, how he got from one place to another, which is what I think always fascinated people about Holmes, but Conan Doyle doesn't really talk about it very much.
Conan Doyle did a really interesting thing with Holmes. He set him up in a way, and he gave us little hints of things that suggested a very complicated man, you know, but didn't really go into the interior of what all that was, you know. So we knew he did cocaine, and we knew that sometimes he would have great ennui, or he would sit in his study and load his gun and shoot Victoria Regina's initials into the wall of Baker Street. All these kind of evocative things about Holmes without actually going into the more psychological implications of what all that was about. I think that was actually a nice way to make the character seem very rich. These things seem like mysteries too, and I think that's why he has even now such broad appeal. He seemed to be more than just a detective, but a rather complicated man. And I think that adds to the desire for people to wish him to be real.
I suppose that's why everybody likes to read the stories, isn't it? Because each of you reading the story feels that you have an understanding of Holmes that goes beyond what's in the book.
Yeah. Well, and as a boy, for me, I was less interested in the mysteries of the Conan Doyle stories than this idea that this guy might have existed. I found the man Sherlock Holmes to be really interesting. And if perhaps he did exist, then what a wonderful world it could be. You could be this incredibly helpful, interesting man and be somehow flawed or complicated. You know, and Watson is kind of, in the story, seems to function as kind of a, in a weird way, a little more, I don't want to say simpler, but a more fundamental and basic kind of person. And Holmes is this kind of, at times, to me, he always seemed at times he could be obnoxious as well, but more complicated guy, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but to get back to the bees for a minute, because they are throughout the whole story, Holmes brings home two Japanese bees in a glass tube?
Yeah, that's right. In a, two Japanese honeybees in a vial, yeah. Which he's not sure how he got them. He finds them in his pocket on the way back from Japan. And he gives them to the boy who he's entrusted with his apiary while he's gone.
Yeah. And we do have to talk about Roger, the boy,
sure,
who takes care of the apiary, because this is another part of this. And this one's pure invention on your part. Mrs.
Oh, yeah.
Hudson is gone by now and has been replaced by whom?
Miss Monroe, the young housekeeper who's brought her son to Holmes's farmhouse. Holmes not too crazy about that, having a housekeeper with a child there. So Roger kind of, you know, slips around Holmes's life. Holmes doesn't want to see a child around there. But in time, he grows close to Roger, and it becomes a kind of, he has kind of develops kind of maternal or paternal feelings for the boy and sees something of himself, I think, in the boy. Because I think what the shift comes for Holmes when he first encounters Roger, and Roger's been stung by a bee. And rather than behave as he imagines a child would who's been stung, you know, crying or carrying on, the boy doesn't do any of that. And in fact, listens to Holmes about how to remove the stinger from his hand. And I think that he realizes, oh, okay, this is might be an exceptional child rather than a, you know, whiny, cryy kind of child. And I think that appeals to him.
Yeah, it's a teaching opportunity again. It's an opportunity to become close to someone whom, and maybe a boy is the best person for him to try to teach to now, because there's no threat involved to his memory.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Roger's 13 or 14 in the book, and I think that's somebody who's kind of forming their memory and forming their mind. And Holmes is at the later stage where he's struggling with the end game of that, you know. And I think that's more appealing and in a weird way kind of safer for him.
And the bees are important to this. I mean, teaching Roger about the apiary, I suppose that goes back to your notion that Holmes' perfect society is the hive colony.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, but I sense that Holmes wasn't a I think he was a royalist. I think he believed in the queen and the country and society. And I suppose the wars and these things were in flux at that time. And I think instilling Roger with this idea of, I don't want to say sacred. Well, I'll say it. The sacredness of the hive was his way of maybe saying, you know, this is where we are. This is our country. This is who we are. And this is what we should strive for, this kind of perfect order and methodical workmanlike order as well.
And why would it appeal so much to Roger then? Because his father's dead in the service of his country?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The father died in the war and he's a fatherless boy. And I think in Holmes, he sees something of a father figure. And Holmes kind of begrudgingly takes on that role, not quite sure how to do it, especially at 93 and having never really done it, at least in my book, having never really had that kind of relationship with a child, you know. But yeah, and I guess the book is kind of populated by fatherless men and children.
Mitch Cullen is the author of six books. The latest is called A Slight Trick of the Mind.